The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McClain and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
This is State of the Nation on today's News Talk. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. We're coming to you live from Central Texas and Central New York. You can visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Well, Brian, we were just talking with Eric Swanson about all the illegals crossing our southern border. Two of them, including one reportedly on the U.S. terrorist watch list, are now in U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement custody after they allegedly attempted to drive a delivery truck past security guards onto Marine Corps base Quantico in Virginia. This occurred May 3rd. The two were Amazon subcontractors attempting a delivery, so it wasn't an Amazon truck. It was one of those private, unlabeled trucks. They did not present credentials, and so they were referred to the side for standard vetting, at which point they attempted to rush the gate, drive onto the base. The MPs employed vehicle denial barriers and immediately contacted ICE. But this is just one example, unfortunately, an example that didn't cause any harm of what we're facing. And this was only from two illegal aliens. Imagine what 20 million could do, Brian.
Yeah, very difficult story to listen to and to imagine. And one would think, oh, ICE, at least, you know, those MPs did their job. ICE is going to get those people, send them back where they came from, or maybe even prosecute them and make them sit here for a while in a room, you know, a four-walled room, small one. But after the last discussion we just had with Eric Swanson, I'm starting to wonder what happens next for these two people. Are they just going to be, is this a capture and release situation?
Absolutely. And follow through. It's all about follow through. It's about follow through with the Congress and the weaponization of our justice system. It's about follow through with Hunter Biden's crimes, with Joe Biden's crimes. It's about follow through with the weaponization of our Department of State. And it's about follow through with border enforcement. You're exactly right. We need to enter the age of consequences. We need to enter the find out phase, and fast. And Brian, we were just talking with Eric Swanson, 37,000 illegals entering San Diego alone last month. Well, as reported by The Federalist, we have more Chinese nationals here illegally in the first 2 days this month, the first May 1st and May 2nd, than in all of 2021. Forget Tokyo Rose. We've got Beijing Biden.
Yeah, very interesting, you know, especially since so many of our politicians say that China is, you know, our number one adversary, at least when it comes to superpowers. Really makes one wonder what is going on in this country.
Well, if we're going to impeach Donald Trump over a perfect phone call and a perfect letter, I think Joe committing, you know, providing aid and comfort to our adversary certainly qualifies for impeachment at the least. But that's where we are in America 2024. Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all the major social platforms, including Facebook, X, the Gram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk, TNT.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
In addition to being one of the most voluminous ports of entry for illegal aliens, San Diego is also one of the most expensive cities in America in which to live. While the average salary is approximately $75,000 per year, well above the national median of $59,384, the average rent is $2,995, almost $900 more than the national median. That means San Diegans, on average, spend almost half their gross income on rent, with some of the highest taxes in the country. Between paying Uncle Sam and paying the landlord, there's very little left to live on. The situation is even more dire than those numbers would indicate. Let's roll this clip.
I'm Moses Small. Here in San Diego, we make a lot of stories about people living on the streets, but new data shows a record number of people are dying on them.
Drug overdoses, diseases, car accidents, and more. These things left at least 550 homeless people around the county dead since January.
So we are in a position where we're providing a lot of services, but people are dying faster than ever on our streets.
That puts us just under last year's record death toll, and the year isn't over yet. Part of the problem...
we've got more people living on the streets than ever before.
People like John Brady. He lived on the streets for a year before working with groups like the Regional Task Force on Homelessness and founding his own group, Lived Experience Advisors. He says the situation now is more dire than when he was homeless back in 2016.
You could find a reasonably priced unit that somebody with either a starting level or a lower level income or Social Security could afford and they could live in. We don't have that now anymore.
So it's a slippery slope for people trying to make ends meet, especially seniors and people with disabilities.
So if you're disabled, which is a majority of people on our streets, and you've spent more than a year on their streets, then you fall into a category of people who lose 17 years of their life. They will die prematurely.
Brady says the same is true for people in shelters or anywhere that's not a home.
Yet we have not provided the solution. And the solution is housing. Homelessness ends with a home. All the rest of it's interim. And that's why we're also focusing on rent subsidies, particularly for seniors, because it is far cheaper for us to keep them in their apartment than it is to have them go through the rehousing process and all the medical trauma that goes with it.
Absolutely tragic. Here to discuss is San Diego real estate agent Mark Powell. This story is heart-rending. We talked last hour with Eric Swanson about people and showed a video clip of a man who was saved by a Border Patrol agent who just happened to be in the right place in the right time and found this man wandering in the desert. People are dying trying to get here, but once they get here, they're dying on the streets. And sometimes these are Americans that have been displaced by illegals that are dying on the streets.
You know, in San Diego, as you stated before, we pay some of the highest taxes in the state. We pay the highest insurance, if you can even get insurance, because the insurance companies are just jumping out of California. It's just not a friendly business state. They're going to other states such as Texas, Florida, Utah, where they're driving up the home prices. But I'm going to share something with you that maybe not too many people around the nation know. In San Diego, we're having an exodus the other way. You know how we have people coming across the border to seek a better life? They come to the United States. They'll cross thousands of miles of terrain, go through jungles, just to land in San Diego to hopefully relocate somewhere in the United States for a better life. But here in San Diego, people are crossing the other side of the border. They're going to Tijuana for a better life, because they can't afford to live in San Diego and home prices are cheaper in Tijuana. So they'll flock over to TJ, they'll get themselves a condo for a couple $100,000 and they'll end up living there. And then they come back across if they need to do some medical things or visit with families. But no, Tijuana, not more than, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, was the murder capital of the world, with hovering around 2,400 murders in just 1 year. So you got to think, you're pretty desperate if you can't afford to live in the city that a lot of people grew up in, because they're either on fixed incomes and they're willing to live in another country that was the murder capital of the world just so they can afford to pay their mortgage or their rent. Because here in San Diego, it is just simply too high. And there's many factors as to why that is the reality here.
I'm so sad to see this happen to San Diego, Mark. When I was leaving California, I stopped in San Francisco. I wanted to pick up a leather jacket on my way out, and I went to a very famous mom and pop store that, you know, specialized in leather. And I made my purchase, and as I was leaving, the woman that was helping me said, you know, it's good that you came in on your way out of the state, because we're probably going to be closed when you come back. We're about ready to retire, and we can't afford to stay here in San Francisco anymore. This was almost 9 years ago at this point. And now I look at San Francisco and it looks like a zombie apocalypse in some places. And people, you know, obviously people have left there in droves. The, you know, entirety of the Embarcadero Mall pretty much empty now. No stores there. I think there's a Swatch watch store left there somehow. But it's just terrible to see this trend spread to other beautiful California cities, and to think that, you know, like half of the people can't afford their rent on their income. That's a pretty stark situation for Californians and San Diegans.
Well, we're all familiar with the arson firefighter, the firefighter that will start a fire and then put it out just to get credit that they did something great. They are able to put out fires, but they're the ones who are causing all the problems. The same thing is true here with our government at the local and at the state level. Most of the reasons why our home prices and our rent prices are so high, it is government imposed. The government has permit fees, these permit fees, and you can substitute the word permit fee with tax because they are already taxing us too much. We pay the highest income tax, property tax, gas tax, insurance tax, every single type of tax you could probably think of, we pay the highest. So they call them permit fees. And permit fees here in San Diego account for about 35 to 50% of the cost of building. Government can't control the cost of plywood or a 2x4 or nails, but they can control their permit fees. And ironically enough, while they say we don't have enough affordable housing, and suggestions have been made by myself and many other people, like slash your permit fees on affordable housing projects, cut them, remove them completely if you have to, they're raising them. Just today in the paper, San Diego developers are going to pay more in permit fees. So there's no way government can solve the problem that they created, and they're making it worse. I don't know what we have to do to get their attention. People are dying on the streets. We've got a migrant crisis, a homeless crisis, a fentanyl crisis, and the place is falling apart right before our eyes. I'm not sure exactly what's going to need to happen so they can make San Diego at least America's finest city again.
Well, what's going to have to happen is the electorate's going to have to wake up, and it's going to have to throw the bums out.
I agree. But, you know, when they have an initiative, for example, there's another initiative that it's essentially a rent control, almost a rent confiscation initiative. And you know what they're calling it? The Justice for Renters Act, because the Attorney General is allowed to name the ballot designation. So people who may not be completely aware of what that initiative is because they didn't read their ballots, proposals, they're not educated on it, they might look at it and go, yeah, justice for renters, yeah, sure, I'll take it. Save the puppies, yeah. Rescue the whales, yeah. But they're all masking something else. They're it's a very kind of deceptive type of way of marketing a rent control measure.
Yeah, if I were a homeowner in San Diego, I got to be honest with you, I would lease my home to the federal government for illegals. Get on a federal government contract, take the money, and move to a state that's part of America.
You know, you're not far off, because many of the people who own apartment complexes, hotels and motels,
yeah,
they did that. And there was no room for anybody else. And they were happy because not only did they have 100% occupancy, they were paying above what they would normally charge you or I to rent. So they're making more money by leasing to migrants, which makes—
Plus, they don't have to deal with any of California's landlord laws.
Nope, because they are the California landlord laws,
right?
Regulators. They don't have to worry about it. Unbelievable, is it? Don't you just sometimes have to shake your head and think, who's running the show? Why are we in this situation? But I agree with you, Timothy. You get what you vote for. And at some point, the voters are just going to have to turn around and wake up, like you're talking about in San Francisco. And I've been there. I was at Union Station 15 years ago, stepping over hypodermic needles. I shot pictures of it and sent it to my brother. I go, I can't believe it. There's needles on the floor. What if I was barefoot or I had a pair of sandals on and I accidentally hit one of these needles and got stuck with it? I get hepatitis, maybe HIV. It's dangerous. It's scary. And it's not a place that I would go to vacation at any time when it was such a beautiful city.
You know, in a beautiful state, I think I'm a native New Yorker and I love the Empire State, but I think California has the most beautiful physical diversity, cultural diversity. I think it's an amazing state and it's an absolute tragedy for Californians, not just for the rest of America, as to what its government has allowed, has done to it. But again, people are getting what they vote for. The pain needs to increase to a point where they start to vote differently. Mark, can't thank you enough for more great analysis right here.
Hey, Timothy,
on today's.
Just one last thing, just one before you, before you cut me off, because you mentioned New York. It took 13 months to build the Empire State Building.
Right.
You can't even get some permits in 13 months here in California.
Well, unfortunately, in New York, too. But I think at least our Democrats look at your Democrats and say, yeah, we don't want to go that far.
Exactly. That's right.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Stay All tuned right, for care, more guys. State of the Nation right here on today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
What does it mean to be intelligently Christian?
You know, it's not just a warm, fuzzy feeling that we have. That's not what Christianity is about, to go someplace to a building and sing a few songs and get a warm, fuzzy feeling and feel like it's a drug, right? It's more to say that the Bible tells us, I believe it's in the book of Timothy, that we've been given all things pertaining to life and godliness. And life is going on around us. And as you can see, we are walking through the valley of the shadow of death as we speak. As you were alluding to earlier, the world is clearly becoming more evil.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
TNTradio.live.
Online.
Online.
Online streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has confirmed 19 cases of monkeypox across 10 U.S. states as of yesterday. Joining us now to discuss this and other stupid headlines about things like this is our friend, Dr. Kelly Victory. Dr. Victory, welcome back to State of the Nation. Wonderful to see you. Here we go again. I mean, really, I got to say, I'm looking at x.com right now. I look up hashtag monkeypox and I see a social media pox against the CDC, against the World Health Organization, against the pandemic industrial complex. So I feel a little bit heartened as I see people around the world basically extending the middle finger to the entire thought. But where are you at with this?
Well, they never disappoint, do they? They're going to continue to try to raise the fear flag any way they can. And this was predictable, primarily because it was so successful for them the last time. Here we are on the eve of a very important election. We're, you know, coming into the most important campaign months before November. And they are desperate to come up with something that will drive people into a state of fear and keep them home and keep them from focusing on all the things, you know, that are wrong with this country. They ran monkeypox up the flagpole previously, you'll recall, a year or so ago, and it was a colossal fail, largely because monkeypox is not a risk to the vast, vast majority of the population. It's something that spreads between men who are having sex with other men, and it is treatable if it's diagnosed early. It's certainly nothing that the general public needs to be concerned about. I think that the disease X that they've been warning us about is likely going to be the bird flu, H5N1, which tragically, and unbeknownst to most Americans, has been weaponized. It's been the subject of gain of function research that happened not at a lab in Wuhan, China, but in labs in the United States, including at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. So the real question people should be asking is, why the heck are we allowing this to go on, given what happened with COVID? Americans are rightly very, very suspicious of the CDC, the FDA, and the pharmaceutical companies. They've been burned by them in the past, and they rightly are turning, I think, a blind eye and a deaf ear to things that they have to say. That does put us in some element of risk when the next big bad public health thing comes along, however, because they're not like, people are not likely to listen to the powers that be because of the colossal disaster that they created the last time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Hasher, I can't believe this story. I must have ESP because literally 2 days ago, when I was talking about the avian flu, this H5N1, and a friend of mine was asking me, is this going to be disease X? Is this how they're going to lock us down for this election? And I said, not sure, maybe, cue monkeypox in 3, 2, I can't believe. After just making a monkeypox joke that monkeypox is back. But Kelly, it's even worse than what you said. I saw a report today that it's not being transmitted in Chinese lab animals, and it is being transmitted in American, U.S. lab animals. So they have engineered this. There's something different between the rats being used in China and the rats being used in U.S. labs, and they have weaponized it specifically to this market.
Well, we will know if this was a lab-created virus if it starts spreading significantly between humans. H5N1 has generally been a risk only to people who, poultry workers, those right. who work with infected birds or with infected cattle. There have been about 800 total cases of H5N1 since it was discovered in 1996. And again, largely people in direct contact with infected animals. If it starts to spread significantly human to human, then fundamentally we know that this was weaponized. This is a lab created virus. Interestingly, we know that some of the cattle in Texas and Louisiana that have tested positive are testing positive for exactly the clade, the variant that came out of the lab in the University of Wisconsin. We know this is a virus that they are working in that lab. So it remains to be seen whether or not they have managed to come up with a way to make it easily transmissible human to human. But any way you cut it, we shouldn't be doing this kind of research for precisely the disastrous results that we saw with COVID-19.
Yeah, this whole idea of gain of function research is ridiculous that we engage in it. And we engage in it all around the world. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of reporting from Diliana Getenyeva at 21stCenturyWire.com, reposted a lot of her work, and she's exposed, just how much money goes into this around the world, and there are labs all over the place. It's actually very shocking. Dr. Victory, hold the line. We're going to run we got a headline we're going to run here. And when we come back, I want to play you this clip. Speaking about gain of function right here on State of the Nation at TNT.
All right, let's get this underway. For our first order of business,
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill.
House Republicans are proceeding with efforts to hold Attorney General Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress over his refusal to provide recordings from an investigation into President Joe Biden's handling of classified documents. Russian President Vladimir Putin, during a meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing, stated that the close relationship between Russia and China is not a threat to any other country. Daniel Perry, a U.S. Army sergeant convicted of murdering Black Lives Matter protester Garrett Foster during the 2020 riots in Austin, Texas, has been pardoned.
The common housefly. Caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Okay, well, welcome back. Let's take a look at this clip, if the studio could run this.
Dr. Tabak, did NIH fund gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology through Echo Health?
It depends on your definition of gain-of-function research. If you're speaking about the generic term, yes, we did, because, but this is research, the generic term is research that goes on in many, many labs around the country. It is not regulated. And the reason it's not regulated is it poses no threat or harm to anybody.
First off, Dr. Victory, what do you think about, I didn't realize we were differentiating between a generic term and something specific here. Can you help me understand this?
Yes, it all depends on your definition of the word is, to quote Bill Clinton. Yes, we're mincing words here. The reality is this: gain of function research is any time we take a pathogen, doesn't have to be a virus, could be a mold, a bacterium, and we manipulate it in a way to make it more transmissible, more contagious, more resistant to therapy, more capable of causing severe disease, more capable of being spread human to human, any number of things that we can do to make it enhance its function as a pathogen. We are doing this in labs all over the United States, including places like the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, the University of Texas in Galveston, as I said, the University of Wisconsin in Madison, plus a host of other of our really storied institutions and academic laboratories. Furthermore, many of these laboratories in the United States are being funded by foreign governments, including the Chinese Communist Party. Now, you really need to ask yourself, why would we be doing this kind of research at U.S.-based laboratories funded by some of our greatest geopolitical foes? Nothing good can possibly come of this. And the idea that no one is at risk is preposterous. This is the reason why a moratorium was placed on this type of research back in 2014 under President Obama. They lifted that ban or that moratorium for reasons that are a bit unclear, because we have seen now, not once or twice, but many times, that lab leaks occur. They occur far more often, I hate to tell you, than people would want to believe. It doesn't necessarily have to be nefarious intent. It can be abject incompetence, that some, you know, lab workers are humans. Accidents happen. Errors occur. And so the idea that we are having weaponized pathogens being funded by U.S. taxpayer dollars or by foreign adversaries on, you know, in our academic institutions is very, very dangerous.
Biologist. So I can see through his BS. And even when we did have a moratorium on gain of function research, Anthony Fauci bypassed it by using Ralph Baric at EcoHealth Alliance as an intermediary. So it needs to be outlawed, flat outlawed. And any biologist found doing gain of research needs to be marched off to jail. Look, I am all for scientific inquiry. As I said, I was trained as a biologist. I understand the science. I understand the reasons why they say they want to do it is to be able to develop antidotes or vaccines against a more virulent pathogen that might occur in nature. Well, guess what? Mm-hmm. Until it occurs in nature, it's not a threat. So let's stop creating these threats.
Absolutely. And you are right. Anthony Fauci did use U.S. taxpayer dollars to funnel this research through EcoHealth Alliance and Peter Daszak over to the lab in Wuhan. Ralph Baric at the University of North Carolina, and we have the receipts, he had email dialogue with Peter Daszak saying, look, that lab over in Wuhan is not secure enough. It is not safe to be doing this type of research at that laboratory because their level of sophistication, their level of control was not high enough in Ralph Baric's, in terms of his opinion, it wasn't. And he is considered to be, you know, the world's expert on coronaviruses. The idea that we are doing this stuff is absolutely unconscionable. And the world has witnessed now what the tragic results can be. The idea that we are now doing this with H5N1, which I predict is disease X. I don't think you really need to read the tea leaves. You can just read the billboards. They've been talking about it. They've been planning on rolling this out. It won't be monkeypox. It's likely going to be an avian flu. And unfortunately, this one is likely going to be a lab manipulated one as well.
Yeah, thank you. I said Ralph Baric when I meant Peter Daszak. Thank you for clarifying.
I knew what you meant.
And what about EcoHealth Alliance? I'm seeing scuttlebutt that they've been cut off at this point. That is that a bit of good news worth celebrating, or what's your take on those
developments? I suppose, but it's a day late and a dollar short. I mean, the damage has been done. This was fundamentally a way to hide what they were doing. That, you know, it was Anthony Fauci's workaround to get, you know, the money sent over to the lab in Wuhan. So yes, it's a good thing that's been shut down. But as long as we keep allowing the Chinese Communist Party or any of our enemies to be investing in and guiding research in our academic institutions, we are at risk. This is a national security risk in addition to a public health risk. So it needs to stop. It needs to be fully exposed. Right now, the only one in Congress who seems to be wedded to looking at it is Rand Paul, is trying very hard to expose the actual origins of COVID-19. And Senator Ron Johnson has certainly been pounding the drum and trying to hold people accountable. The rest of Congress appears to have their head in the sand or their hand in the till. I'm not sure which, maybe both. They are certainly funded heavily by the pharmaceutical complex. Big Pharma puts an awful lot of money into these people's different campaigns.
And we need to keep our eyes on the ball, because just because EcoHealth Alliance is off the stage now doesn't mean that the players are. And it doesn't mean that they can BK EcoHealth Alliance on Friday, and on Monday they can stand up Health Eco Alliance as an entire new corporate entity, and we can be right back at square one.
100%. Anthony Fauci has stepped down, but it's like whack-a-mole with him. I promise he will pop back up, likely on the board of some pharmaceutical company or advising one of these, quote, nonprofits like EcoHealth Alliance. These people do. It's the same players. They just get new numbers and new jerseys.
Yeah, they absolutely do. We're almost out of time, but I have to get this in. I got to ask you. We saw the PM of Slovakia have an assassination attempt on him the other day. And today I'm learning that the day before that, he made some very stark comments about the WHO, about experimental gene jabs, about forcing people to take inoculations. And then that happened. Mm-hmm. Do you think there is perhaps a conspiracy here or coincidence?
Well, he certainly has a long list of enemies. He's one of the few people who has stood up and eschewed not only the issue of the wet market origin of the COVID, but he has spoken out quite a bit about the dangers of the vaccines. He's also doesn't buy into the climate crisis and our need to to go whatever you want to call it, carbon negative or carbon zero, whatever. Ridiculous thing they're trying to push upon us. He's also pushed back on the transgender ideology. So here's a guy who's pushed back on probably four of the top narratives going around. So he's got a long list of enemies. And he was very vocal about this very dangerous WHO treaty that's very, you know, likely to get passed by President Biden. So, you know, whether this was just some nut job who tried to take him out for other reasons, I can't say. But he certainly has a list of people who would like to remove him because of his very vocal stance on these different issues.
Yeah. One has to wonder at this point with comments like that, especially with the timing. Dr. Victory, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your expert opinions and analysis. We appreciate you. Anywhere you'd like to send us to follow you?
Well, my only social media platform, and I'm quite active, is on X or Twitter, at Dr. Kelly Victory, and as well with my association with the wellness company, so twc.health.
Thank you so much, Dr. Victory. This is State of the Nation. Stay tuned. You're watching TNT.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go, but I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there, providing hot meals, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
To learn more, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Critically analyzing national affairs. This is State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk. TNT.
The other night, one of our guests, Libertarian Party candidate for president Mike Kermott, mentioned the Redeclaration of Independence, an initiative to keep office holders and federal candidates accountable to the Constitution. Joining us now to discuss is Barry Hinckley, a former Tea Party activist in Boston and a descendant of Colonel James Barrett, commander of the Minutemen, who engaged in the British on 19 April 1775 at the North Bridge in Concord, Massachusetts. Barry, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Great to be with you guys.
My biggest political wish is to have a federal government that fits inside the Constitution. How do we get this done, Barry?
Oh, sorry, inside voice there. It's not going to be a simple task for sure, but a few of us got together, a bunch of high school chums from Massachusetts, actually, and we thought that if we laid down a redeclaration of independence and sent a warning shot down to Washington via our elected representatives, hopefully we could start to restrain the Washington political empire.
Well, my alias when I had the Patriot Uprising channel on YouTube was John Parker, for Colonel John Parker, who was leading the Minutemen at Lexington Green. So there might be some synergy here. If you need some support, just give a holler.
Well, it sounds like we've met in the right place, because my great eighth grandfather was Colonel James Barrett. And I'm named after his father. My real name is Benjamin Barrett Hinckley, and so I go by my Nick middle name. But of sounds like they were compatriots a couple miles apart, you know, sadly fighting the exact same tyranny that we're facing today. I mean, you know, different century, made up differently, named differently, but an empire nonetheless. And we believe, and, you know,
these people don't have the stylish uniforms that the Lobsterbacks had.
No. And a lot of them are hiding, sadly, in plain sight. At least the Redcoats stood out and made a better target. I mean, some
of these
guys.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they do have the purple hair, right?
Well, certainly there are some octogenarian purple hair down in Washington that has been there way too long. And one of the tenets of the Redeclaration of Independence is term limits, because we do believe that is one of the fundamental problems with Washington is, you know, absolute power absolutely corrupts. And there we have it. They've been there too long. They've amassed too much power and they are corrupt.
In fact, I was just looking at redeclaration.org while we were talking, and my eye went straight to item 3, which is term limits. You know, we've been talking a lot about, we've kind of been tracking the stock, you know, activities of some of those creatures up there on Capitol Hill. And it is shocking, absolutely shocking, how much money they make on puts. I mean, there was a guy today, I don't have it up in front of me, but one of our representatives just bet against America to the tune of like $2.7 million or something like that. And it's just like, that would, I would wager that that would not be happening if these people were only there for, you know, 4 years, 8 years, or whatever the, you know, appropriate limit would be.
Well, Brian, we thought a lot about the term limits. It is not a long paragraph, but quite succinct. And the fundamental thought process going into it was that if you tell someone that's already going to be hungry for, you have to be hungry for something to run for office. And, you know, hopefully we find people that are hungry to leave America a better place. However, a lot of people are hungry for a career. And if you give them an open-ended 30 years plus with a 98% reelection rate, with all the advantages stacked up with incumbency, you attract the personality that is into self-service. However, if you limit someone to 12 years, that person by necessity will need another career. And that means that that person is more likely into public service. And that is the same personality type that made this country great in the first place. It is not the personality type that is running this place today, which is into self-service. And as you've pointed out so succinctly, are looting the place blind.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi made $7 million last month. It's ridiculous. Her net worth is now approaching $250 million. But Barry, the problem I have with term limits is that, like communism, everywhere it's been tried, it hasn't worked. In fact, it's had exactly the opposite effect as intended, because you've put an expiration date on that legislator and they know, you know, it's not a sell by date, it's a sell out by date. So I thought this through, and you're exactly correct. Ideally, in a perfect world, the electorate would wake up and realize that their vote matters and they have to start voting more intelligently. But with all the benefits of incumbency and the apathy of our electorate, in a real world, that's not going to happen, right? So what about age maxima? We have age minimums right there in the Constitution, 25 for the House, 30 for the Senate, and 35 for the presidency. What if we put an age maximum of 65 for the House, 70 for the Senate, and 75 for the Oval Office, say? That would accomplish the goal, and it wouldn't have the negative impact of having the special interest lobbyist empowered even more than they already are.
Well, two things. First of all, you're not alone in this point. It is a good point, because people say, well, we want to keep the good ones, like the Chuck Grassleys and stuff. They're doing God's work down there. However, I will say to those people, how's it working now? What have we got to lose? It is a total disaster. They've got $34 trillion in debt racked up, and that's just on the short-term credit card debt. That doesn't count the 200 plus trillion that is estimated that we have of these contingent liabilities that we don't have the funds for. So it's not working now. We need a change. That said, now let's address the age issue. You know, I think punishing people for being old and in shape, like I had dinner with two 85-year-old, 90-year-olds last week that were as sharp as everyone on this show right now. And those people could actually probably serve 4 years. So I think we really need and they are being rewarded for taking good care of themselves, diet and exercise, versus, you know, there are some 65-year-olds out there that I wouldn't bet could walk across the street. They take such poor care of themselves. So age is 78%.
78% of the, of males under the age of 26 are ineligible for military service because they're too fat. So there's that.
You said it out loud. Thank you. But you'll look at, I mean, I don't want to get political, but look at Trump and Biden. They're 2 years apart and they look like they're 2 decades apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. Absolutely. You know, one of the other items on here that really sticks out to me today is end the U.S. Department of Education. This thing has become so onerous, so bloated, so totalitarian, so authoritarian, and that they softly and not so softly indoctrinate all of the youth in this country to the point where, you know, many Americans are concerned, are these even going to be Americans by the time they're 50 or 60? You know, they're not learning any civics. They're not learning any, you know, it's just like they're not learning any history. It's a huge problem. Talk to us a little bit about the Department of Education.
Well, I mean, it's education. So let's start by giving them a grade. Failing. I mean, if you're number 28 out of 32 industrialized nations in your results, but you're spending in the top three, you're failing, number one. Number two, let's really peel back the onion here. The Department of Education has become a government jobs program. There's 4 million or so teachers and people related to teachers that work in schools that vote. Mostly are forced to join a union, mostly send dues to that union. That union supports one party. When you have a nation tied 50-50 in how they feel about major elections like the presidency, 4 million votes really matters. It's a government jobs program that subsidizes one political party that's failing in educating our kids. I don't know how else to say it. End it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and with the parents' rights thing having to be, I mean, it's amazing to me. You know, it's one of those things I'm shocked, not shocked, you know, considering the environment we're in politically and culturally, but absolutely amazing that, you know, we're to the point now where parents have to stand up and fight entire school boards, you know, and sometimes that leads to them being fought by the IRS, investigated, you know, character assassinated, canceled. It's like it's gone way too far. We've totally jumped the shark when it comes to education.
Well, we've jumped the shark and it's time to take it out back behind the shed and shoot it. I mean, it's just an example of another Washington program that is failing. I mean, point out one that's doing a great job.
Maybe what we need is Kristi Noem as our next Department of Education secretary.
Well, how about we just close that? I mean, listen, I want someone like Vivek to come in and, you know, or Elon Musk. I mean, I loved his line when he was interviewed, you know, and he was getting, you know, I can't remember which was it MSNBC. He was harassing or someone else for, you know, firing 80% of the staff at Twitter. And of course, I'm a big Twitter user and the platform has never run better. Yeah. And he simply said, well, it turns out you don't need 80% of the people to run a censorship operation. You know, and so there you have it. I think we have the same problem in Washington.
I love Vivek for Commerce Secretary. He would oversee the U.S. Patent Trademark Office. He'd be in charge of our foreign trade arrangements. I think Vivek would be amazing there. Now, what does the redeclaration say about, oh, I don't know, how about DOJ FBI? Because I think FBI needs to be scrapped and it's functions parsed out to other agencies, if not eliminated entirely.
Well, ultimately, the Redeclaration of Independence, as you said in the open, is an accountability project for our representatives. So when they go to Washington, D.C., they have a list of 10, you know, commandments, if you will, that they will carry with them to try to endeavor to enforce and pass. And so, you know, I think it would get way too long if we decided to list all the agencies that need to be scrapped or redone. We want to send people there that will know that the people's work is to run an efficient and lean central government and leave the rest of it, just like the 10th Amendment says, to the states.
Yeah, I really think we need to revive the 9th and 10th Amendment.
Yeah, absolutely. What about energy independence? I noticed that energy independence is on there, and that is one of the things that is currently crushing a lot of Americans is the price of energy and fuel.
Yeah, our electrical bill doubled. We don't have a big house. My wife and I, you know, we're empty nesters now. We're down to 2,300 square feet, and our electrical bill went from 250 to 500 a month. And that is not 3.5 or 4 or 5 or even 10% inflation. That's massive inflation. It's crushing us, and it's crushing us because once again, we have the people in Washington, D.C. that are they're trying to orchestrate, you know, some agenda that is good for them and not good for the people. We need to let the meritocracy that is America drill, baby, drill. You know, all of the above solutions, and let the market compete and deliver affordable energy, because that is the backbone of everything in this country. You don't have energy, you don't have cities, you have chaos. We need affordable energy, and we need energy independence, and that needs to be a big focus.
Yeah, what happened to Joe for energy? That was Joe Kennedy's big initiative, Citizens Energy. You know, all of a sudden, it turns out that oil and gas are a bad thing in the Democrat Party. That's how he made his millions.
You know, I've stopped trying to understand their motives because they are all over the road and completely incongruent with not only American values, but what the average American needs to get by and pursue their life, their liberty, and their happiness. I don't know where this is all coming from. I can only think corrupt globalists are running the show, because no one American would be calling these shots that I've ever met that is founded in American values.
I alluded to my Patriot Uprising TV show at the top of the interview, and I said it 7 years ago. They're commiecrats. They hate you. They hate me. They hate America. And once you view everything through that lens, every single thing they do makes sense. And they're literally flying the Chinese communist flag at Boston City Hall, not alongside the United States flag, but in preference to the United States flag.
Well, and that's another reason we need to send accountable representatives to Washington, D.C., because I think they have been there too long, most of them. And I'm going to disagree with you, Timothy, on the term limits, because I think they've been infiltrated. I think there many of them are corrupt and have been bought off. And we need fresh faces
that will agree
to be held accountable, because that's the real problem. They all say it on the campaign trail. Then they go there, they get bought off, and they know that with the power of incumbency, there's a 98% chance if they just carry the water that they'll get the best job back that they've ever had. You know what they call Washington? They call it Hollywood for ugly people. And let me tell you something. It's the best job most of these folks have had, and they are abusing their power.
It's my favorite line. I used it right last night. Barry, we got a couple minutes left. Where can people find out more about the Redeclaration of Independence? Where can they follow you?
Just go to redeclaration.org. As Brian said earlier in the show, and you can follow us at Redeck News on Twitter or Instagram, or X as they call it now.
Yeah, outstanding. Any final thoughts? And by the way, we absolutely agree on the goal of term limits. It's maybe the mechanism.
Yeah, we can debate the solutions. That's the beauty of debating ideas. Well, my only request is that people go to the redeclaration.org, read it. It's about 2-minute read. Sign it, forward it to 10 friends, and make sure you forward it to the representative you support or the one that's running against them, and make sure they agree to be held accountable while they're doing our work in Washington, D.C.
That's a very easy lift. Folks, you heard it. Go to redeclaration.org, sign it, send it to 10 friends, and make sure you tell them to do the same. And also, I love the idea of sending it to your rep if you like him or her. And if you don't, sending him again to the primary opponent. Barry Hinckley, we're going to have you back. This has been a great conversation. More great conversation is right here on today's News Talk with the Jason Burma Show. For Brian McClain, I'm Timothy Shea. Until next time, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.